You've now got four races in a row where Lando's form has been fairly exceptional.
He's driving like a champion, dare I say.
Minutes after the Grand Prix, he was already like, we weren't fast enough. That's the kind of mentality that you need. It's got to be a fight, fight, fight approach right now for him.
Piastri's now got nothing to lose in this championship, has he?
The pendulum can switch so quickly. No one's sleeping well right now, Tom. No one's sleeping well.
Vegas is the last opportunity for Max Verstappen to put down a marker, in my book.
It's still, I think, a situation where Max could win the next three Grand Prix.
What about Ferrari? John Elkann, the boss, says my drivers need to focus more and talk less.
That's going to set a tone in that team. It's not the kind of tone you want to show up to the racetrack with.
Welcome, everyone, to F1 Nation's preview of the Las Vegas Grand Prix. The world title can't be won this weekend, but whatever happens, it will be huge. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me on the show is F1 TV expert and six-time IndyCar race winner, James Hinchcliffe. Hinch, great to have you on the show again. All good after Brazil, first of all?
Yeah, thanks for having me, TC. Always nice to be back. And yes, I mean, what a race. What a race weekend. I mean, crazy Grand Prix, crazy sprint race. I don't think anybody expected it. We do sort of, you know, come to expect the unexpected from Brazil, don't we? And certainly weren't let down.
Yeah, that is now the norm there. But we've now got three race weekends to go. It's getting tense. It doesn't matter who you support. And the trio of races are coming back to back to back. The season's going to be over before we know it. We'll talk about the title contenders in a minute. But can we start by taking a look at this, I think, unique Las Vegas circuit? It's so different to any other one on the calendar. And I'm not only talking about the backdrop. How do the drivers approach Vegas, Hinch?
I think with a little bit of caution, to be honest. You know, it is a very challenging circuit, certainly. And you got to think the closest thing to it on the calendar is Baku. You know, street circuit, some obnoxiously long straights, a lot of slow corners, not a lot of quick stuff. But at the same time, such different conditions. You know, night race, very cool. And that really just changes the dynamic for certain teams, certain cars. And you know, the drivers themselves, no one has a lot of experience here. This is only the third year of the race, and two kind of sets of data points is not a lot for drivers and engineers to go off of when you consider, you know, other racetracks and how much information they have to prepare with.
Hinch, there's a lot to follow up on there. Can we start by the time of the race? It's a little bit less nocturnal this year. It's gone from a 10 p.m. start to an 8 p.m. start. I actually had a look at the temperatures. The ambient will be a little bit warmer at 8 p.m. as opposed to 10 p.m. Will that have any ramifications on performance, first of all?
My general belief is that the difference won't be that much. I think, you know, the people that have excelled there and excel in cool conditions will still, you know, we're still going to be on the cooler side of the spectrum for what we race in. And so I think we're not going to see a huge fluctuation in that necessarily. Year to year performance, you can't go off of. I mean, cars change, things change. You kind of have to more look at who's been performing well at street circuits, who's been performing well in cool conditions in 2025. And, you know, it's, again, some of those numbers are the same, but it does, for example, still take a little bit of the advantage away from McLaren, who can do much better with tire management in the much hotter races. I do still think that Mercedes is strong in cooler conditions. Ferrari potentially could be strong. They've been there or thereabouts in Vegas the last couple of years, but, they've been not great, you know, necessarily in similar tracks this year. So it's we won't know until FP1.
And it's a track that rubbers in, right, as the weekend goes on. I mean, yes, the asphalt is still quite new, but I mean, it's worth emphasizing. It is a proper street track that is going to get grippier and grippier with every session, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think year one, there were no support series there. At least year two, there was something else, you know, on the undercard, which does help clean the track off quicker and essentially makes track evolution even higher because you have multiple series putting rubber down and cleaning the surface off. But we've had actually a couple races in a row with fairly high track evolution. You know, Austin's fairly high, Mexico's fairly high, Brazil's fairly high. So the teams are kind of used to that. It is more difficult on a street circuit because there's no room for error, right? So as the track grip improves, you are trying to find those limits, push those limits, but it's a difference between, you know, dropping a wheel in the dirt or ripping the right rear corner off the car. So you do have to approach it a little bit differently from the driver's perspective.
And Hinch, with your helmet on, just tell us about the approach. How different are you driving in FP1 as opposed to quali? Are you building up? How much margin are you leaving in FP1 that you're not leaving in quali?
Well, it depends who you are. I mean, Verstappen seems to leave no margin at any point and goes out his first run and is a second and a half quicker than the next quickest car, who is intelligently building up to it. But such is the genius of Max Verstappen. But certainly, no, you do have to build up to it, I think, a little bit more cautiously at a track like Vegas, because it is a street circuit, because the walls are so close. But again, because of those cool conditions as well, we don't do a lot of races in this sort of temperature range. And so I think making sure the tires get into that proper window, it is so important with these Pirellis, is having the surface temp at the right point by the start of the lap, managing it throughout the lap. And I think it's probably going to take an extra run or two for, you know, drivers and engineers to kind of figure out what sort of prep they need and where that sweet spot really is.
Okay, look, the focus then is going to be on the three title contenders. Let's deal with the McLaren guys first. Lando Norris is 24 points clear of Oscar Piastri. With three races and a sprint to go, that means there's 83 up for grabs. Lando can win the championship now without winning another race. He's that far ahead. How much of an advantage is that?
It is definitely a big advantage, and it's even bigger now than it would have been, you know, had McLaren been able to keep up the relative form that they had in the first half of the season, when it was just almost a foregone conclusion of a McLaren 1-2. It's just which guy was in front, and you were sort of swapping that, you know, 7 points back and forth. Now it's not a foregone conclusion. And so it makes the job of the hunter that much more difficult in some perspectives, but it also can benefit you, because if you're the guy that's leading and there's two cars in between you and your championship rival, you're taking more than that 7 points away. So It's a bit of a double-edged sword. The fact that whether it's McLaren's performance has dropped off or the field relatively has caught up, the fact that it's not just the two of them trading first and second places anymore, it complicates it a lot. And so even with that, you know, relatively healthy advantage, you know, Lando's right. He cannot let up. He cannot rest on anything. It's still all to play for. I mean, 83 points, you said? That's a lot of points up for grabs. It's, you know, four times what he has, basically. It's no one's sleeping well right now, Tom. No one's sleeping well.
Well, he's sleeping the best of the three, surely. I feel we've seen a slightly different Lando at the last couple of races, certainly. A confident Lando who doesn't make mistakes. All those little errors that were creeping in earlier this year and have done in previous seasons seem to have been eliminated. He's driving like a champion, dare I say.
I think that's a very good way to put it. The little mistakes that we would see from him in the first half of the year, I always saw them as, you know, when the internal pressure was high. He's always been very good with the external pressure. You know, you put him on track in a wheel-to-wheel battle, he's very rarely making mistakes. He's very rarely putting a wheel wrong that opens an opportunity up for a driver to get around him. He's been very, very strong in that sense. His mistakes were, you know, leads Q1, leads Q2, messes something up in Q3. You know, that was kind of a more common thing. And that's why Brazil, that first run in Q3, was, I think a lot of people were saying, oh no, here we go again. And what was so great about that performance is he put on his next set, went back out and, you know, blitzed the field by 2.5, 3 tenths, whatever it was. So that shows you that he is driving with an incredible amount of confidence, and he's not letting those mistakes creep in. He had the same thing in Mexico. You know, it was such a dominant entire weekend, both weekends, really. You can't fault a thing that he's done over the last, you know, 8-10 on track sessions, really. So he tries to shy away from saying things like momentum. He said he didn't believe in momentum, right? And to a certain extent, I understand what he means. The pendulum can switch so quickly through no fault of your own. So that's where there's a little bit of a difference. I think from a driver's performance, pure performance of what a driver has control over, where he's at right now is a very good spot. His confidence is in the exact right place, but it's checked. He's not getting cocky. He's not getting arrogant about it. He was mad that he didn't beat Max by more than 10 seconds, because if you look actually at the data in the Grand Prix, had Max not started from pit lane, McLaren might not have won that race. And so even though he wins the race by 10 seconds, you know, I was giving him a little bit of flack for on the post race show, but I actually really respect that approach, because even in the minutes after the Grand Prix, he was already like, we weren't fast enough. How do we do better next week? That's the kind of mentality that you need. It's got to be a fight sort of approach right now for him.
This episode is sponsored by Square, the toolkit built to help you run your business, keep up with demand, and grow through the busiest time of year. And with the holidays creeping around the corner, which means more customers, more orders, and most likely more chaos, having the right tools can make all the difference to staying ahead of the rush. And luckily, Square gives you everything you need to keep your business running smoothly, whether it's taking payments, managing inventory, staffing, or even setting up an online store. Square lets you do it all from one system. And right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/F1Nation. And it's not just built for big businesses either. It works just as well for pop-ups, salons, cafes, repair services, whatever your setup, Square flexes with you. I've started spotting more and more small businesses using Square. You can tell straight away. One-tap payments, instant receipts, personalized offers, and service that actually feels focused, because they're not wasting time on clunky tech. The holiday rush is coming. Square helps you run faster, sell smarter, and stay in control, even when things get busy. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/F1Nation. That's SQUARE.com/go/F1Nation. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
Piastri's
in the wall! In the wall and out of the race! The slippery conditions put Piastri in the barriers!
Massive!
Three wide into turn number one! How brave is Piastri feeling? He hits Antonelli, who hits Charles Leclerc! And Piastri will be up to second position!
Oh, it was a brave move from Piastri again. I think he had to go for it there. He had such a good run on the safety car restart.
Key moment in the Formula One World Championship. Oscar Piastri has been given a 10-second time penalty.
Let's talk about Oscar Piastri. He's been through a bit of a blip when it matters in terms of the championship. Oscar's been suffering for a few races. That's when Lando's peaked.
What's interesting is after Baku, I think myself, I won't speak for anybody else, I was sort of thinking, man, on a weekend when Oscar has a rare mistake and a rare issue, either McLaren or Lando specifically didn't get it done. Like, they didn't have the car. They weren't quite the fastest car there, but he did sort of botch qualifying, started seventh, couldn't do anything from there, and didn't take full advantage of it. And I thought, man, it's so unfortunate for him that on the day that Oscar struggles, him and the car just weren't what they needed to be to really capitalize on it. But then you fast forward, and all the subsequent days where Oscar's had off-ish days in comparison to Lando, he has delivered, right? And he has maximized what that package has been capable of. So it is a bit of a double blow for Oscar, because not only has his form seemed to have dropped, you've now got kind of four races in a row where Lando's form has been fairly exceptional. And it's a tough place to come back from as a driver.
But I think in Brazil, we started to see the rebuild was starting to take place. He wasn't struggling with the car as much there as he had been in Mexico and Austin. And his pace on the soft tire in the middle of the race was much, much stronger than that of Lando. So we'll come on to whether he deserved the penalty. But I think he surely will have come away from Brazil in a more upbeat frame of mind anyway.
Yeah, I mean, not happy with the result maybe, but happy with the performance. Almost kind of how I hope he left Mexico. Because the second half of the Grand Prix in Mexico, and we spoke about this, right? He really did sort of figure out what it was he needed to figure out on how to drive that car in those types of conditions. And you can sort of look at Austin and Mexico City as unique sort of tracks. You know, Andrea Stella saying that the car needed to be driven in a way that's comes a little more naturally to Lando in those conditions, less so to Oscar. But the second half of the Grand Prix in Mexico, he seemed to really make some strides. everyone sort of expected Brazil to be a bit more up his alley, a bit more his type of racetrack. First practice would have made you thought that for sure. The gap in sprint qualifying, I think, was a little surprising. And I don't know if maybe there was a little mistake on Oscar's lap or if that was his full potential. I don't remember what he was saying post session there. The sprint race was a blow. That was a huge blow. Maybe he takes some consolation from the fact that two other drivers at the exact same time had the exact same issue. So it's easy to kind of look back as a driver and be like, okay, exceptionally difficult conditions. We all made a similar type of error. I didn't do anything completely erroneous in it, and it led to us, you know, in this position. And then in the Grand Prix, man, he was moving. Like he had the pace, the move that he pulled off that I'm sure we're going to get to, had him right on Lando's gearbox. And that was what he needed to do. It was great to see him get his elbows out and force an issue and try to make that progress, because he knew that's what he needed to do with Lando up there leading the race.
Well, Andrea Stella, team principal, said after the race that the 10-second penalty was harsh for the move down the inside of Kimi Antonelli that, of course, then threw him into Charles Leclerc in a race-ending accident for Charles. Stella says it was harsh. I thought Oscar was magnanimous. I would have been much stronger if I was him, because yes, he locked up, but at no point did his trajectory change. It's not like he understeered into the side of Kimi Antonelli. It was a 3-1 doesn't go, or 3-2 doesn't go situation. And Antonelli had room on his right. I thought it was harsh. The way the rules are written, he was either going to have a 10-second penalty or no penalty. And if we want racing drivers to race, there was enough doubt in that to not give him a penalty. You know, and then you start thinking, well, where would he have ended that race? Could he have beaten Lando Norris? And it's unfortunate that a decision in the stewards' room has ramifications as large as it was.
As they did in Silverstone, right? I mean, it's not the first time that Oscar's been on the receiving end of this. And I think the overwhelming majority of people agree that it was a harsh penalty. I really don't think any penalty was needed at all. I mean, you said it. Yes, he momentarily locked the brakes, but at no point had he lost control of the car. His car ended up exactly on the apex where he was planning for it to be. If you look at the trajectory of Kimi's car, it is identical to what Lando's car was, in the sense that he was turning in as if there was no car there. If we were talking about a 90-degree street circuit, where the line is very narrow and the track is narrow and there's a wall on the exit, maybe you're going to be more forceful in getting your car down to the apex on the racing line in that scenario, because going wide might lead to you hitting the wall. Turn one in Brazil, you could be four car widths off the apex and still make turn two. You know, it's not a corner that's like that. Charles was two car widths at least wide of Kimi. He had locked up and kind of missed the corner a little bit. And while, yes, I do feel bad that Charles ends up out of the race as a result of the contact, at some point you've got to say, guys, going three wide into a corner, you're going racing. And you have to accept that there are risks to that. And if you come out with, you know, the DNF or the damage as a result, you went in three wide. You should go in three wide. That's racing. That's what we're here to do. But penalizing the guy that really didn't, I don't know. I'm with you. I don't believe in the penalty. I think it was the wrong call.
And as a result of that penalty, Piastri's now got nothing to lose in this championship, has he? He's just flat out for three race weekends and see what happens at the end, isn't it? There's no pressure on him now, really.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of like how Max was coming into Brazil, right? Max came into Brazil in basically a must-win situation, or at the very least, must beat both McLarens. He didn't do that. For all intents and purposes, Max is out of this championship. I know we've said that before and then retracted that before, but I really do kind of believe that this time. I think Vegas is going to be so important for Oscar, because on paper it probably shouldn't be a track that he beats Lando, especially with the form that he's on right now. Where Qatar is, you know, Qatar's a track that you would, I don't want to say expect Oscar to be ahead, but you expect it to be a very close fight at worst, maybe Oscar comfortably ahead at best. With a sprint race, more opportunity for, you know, more points to be gained there. So making sure the gap doesn't grow before they get to Qatar, I think, is going to be very, very crucial for Oscar. If Lando beats him in Vegas, it gets exponentially harder for him to claw that back.
And Vegas is the last opportunity for Max Verstappen to put down a marker in my book, because if you look at the two previous races we've had there, McLaren have been nowhere. You know, it's been all about Mercedes and Ferrari. Mercedes last year, Ferrari the year before. Okay, Max Verstappen won the race in 23, but it was Ferrari on the front row. So I think McLaren are going to go into this weekend. It's a bit of an unknown. Lando was certainly unsure about their prospects after the race in Brazil. So Max has to capitalize on this. So, and actually, when I said to him after the press conference in Brazil on Sunday evening, look, how do you fancy your chances going forward? He said, I have no idea. Look at us this weekend. Look where we were on Friday compared to where we are today, Sunday, with the fastest car in the field. So he said, I don't know what to expect at these last races, but you kind of, he's Max, they're Red Bull. I feel that car has enough performance in it for them. They're going to find it. They're going to find that performance at these last races. It might be hard work. It might mean having to do what they did in Brazil if they don't find it early doors in the weekend, but I think they will. That's my gut feeling about Red Bull in Vegas. What about you?
I completely agree with that. But I just also don't think that this is his last opportunity to have a good shot at it, because look at what they did this weekend. They were nowhere, relatively speaking. I mean, not even relatively speaking. He went out in Q1 on pure performance, which I learned this weekend has never happened before in his career, which is insane. But the team took a good hard look at it, took the car to Parc Fermé, made the changes they need to change, and look what the pace became in the race. And I think that's why Lando was so stressed, was because on paper, Vegas should be a them track anyway, a Red Bull track compared to McLaren. But based on that pace, there's nothing to say we're going to get to Qatar and Max can't fight for the win there. There's nothing to say we can't get to Abu Dhabi and have him be fighting for the win there. That's a track that we know that that team and that driver can be very good at, regardless of what anyone else is doing. So it's still, I think, a situation where Max could win the next three Grand Prix.
But Hinch, he's 49 points back. That's
I don't think he's going to win the championship. But
for the neutral, that's the gutting thing, isn't it? The gap is now so big to Lando that Lando can just manage it now if he drives intelligently.
And this is the part that I wonder if Red Bull's frustrated at, because, you know, there was a lot of talk in Brazil about kind of how they approached setting up the car. They brought maybe a slight, I don't know, it wasn't even a modified floor, I don't think there was any updates from any of the teams in Brazil.
Yeah, first time this year.
Right, but they were doing something different, I heard, with the floor, or were trying to make it work a certain way because on paper the numbers were saying it was better. Well, the lap time was arguing that fact, and they stuck with it. Whatever setup philosophy they went with obviously didn't work. And then again, you look at the pace in the Grand Prix, and they're all going to be sitting there thinking, if we had just figured this out one session sooner. And I'm sure a lot was learned that weekend, and they probably have a better sense of how to keep the car in that window for these last three races. But again, I'm kind of with you. It's a little bit too little too late in terms of the Drivers' Championship, but we'll see.
We'll see. And to go back to what you were saying at the start, Vegas is very similar to Baku in terms of the long straights and the slow 90-degree corners. Who won in Baku this year convincingly?
Max Verstappen.
That man, Max Verstappen. There's more to come from our Las Vegas preview in a moment, but I just wanted to let you know about the other official F1 podcast you can listen to this week. My latest guest on F1 Beyond the Grid is Oscar Piastri, who talks about the pressure of fighting his teammate Lando Norris in the World Championship battle and how he's made such a big step forward this year. That's out now. You can watch our chat on the F1 YouTube channel as well. And this week's F1 Explains is all about what you can expect from the Cadillac F1 team joining the grid in 2026 with their CEO, Dan Tauris. That's out on Friday. Just search for F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Explains on your podcast app.
Vegas! George Russell wins the Las Vegas Grand Prix.
Viva! Oh, boys, I get it. Wow, come on.
What about Mercedes then, Hinch? Last year's winners. Do you think Mercedes go to Vegas as favourites?
Probably. you know, I think if you're just looking at, you know, pure numbers and all the rest of it, it's probably between them and Red Bull as in terms of pure favorites. You know, the performance last year was unbelievable. I think a lot of the traits of that car still exist this year. I think it's better in other ways, maybe stronger even. Of course, the rest of the field will have made, you know, adjustments and figured certain things out from last year to make their cars more competitive. But yeah, I think with the way George has been driving and what we know about that car and that track, you would think that they're right up there with Max in terms of, you know, who you expect to be quick right out of the gate.
Everyone talks so much about how cooler conditions help Mercedes, but that's in a race situation. That doesn't explain the advantage that Russell had in qualifying over one lap, does it? That's just raw performance.
It is, but it's also, again, we talk about the tire temps and the tire prep. And when you have a car, you know, what was so drastic about the Mercedes last year and why it excelled in cool conditions is because it was so hard on its tires. It overheated them in anything that was moderate ambient to high. That in cooler temps, when other teams were struggling to get the tire into the right window for qualifying, Mercedes could do it quite comfortably just because of the characteristic of the car. So I don't think it's as much a pure performance thing as it was their ability to kind of exploit and get the most out of the tire, whether it was qualifying conditions over one lap or race conditions over a stint. I think that's part of where that advantage came from. They've done a lot to mitigate that because we don't have a lot of cool Grand Prix in a year. We have a lot of hot Grand Prix in a year. And so you'd rather it the other way. It'll be interesting to see if they still have as much of an advantage, because if anything they've done to try to reduce the amount of energy they're putting in the tire over one lap has actually made it harder to get to those optimum temperatures in you know, the cooler ambience.
Well, and the last time we had these three Pirelli compounds, the C3, 4, and 5, was in Singapore, a hot race in which George Russell dominated Saturday and Sunday. So yeah, right. Maybe to be better in Singapore, you're going to be worse in Vegas, but we will find out. What about Kimi Antonelli? This is the first time he's going to be racing in Vegas. As I said a moment ago, you know, he put one over Russell in Brazil. He was very cool under pressure in the closing stages when he had the giant Max Verstappen closing in on him. Have you seen enough now to understand why Toto Wolff was so keen to put him in the car at such a young age?
Yes, for sure. But I also think it's important for people to remember that they didn't plan on putting him in the car at quite such a young age. Lewis had another year. Like, Lewis wasn't supposed to be leaving, right? They wanted Lewis for another year. They wanted Kimi to have a second year of F2 and come in with a little bit more experience, more TPC testing, more FP1s, all that stuff. So I do think that's an important thing to remember whenever you're looking at anything that Kimi does or doesn't do in 2025. He came in less prepared than Mercedes planned for him to be in their ideal world, perfect grand master plan, right? When you take that into consideration and you look at, you know, what he's done this year, you can certainly see why Mercedes thought there was potential there and why they think he could be, you know, a world champion in the future. There are still a lot of polishing to do. I think that's an undeniable truth. And I don't think anybody, Kimi himself, would argue that fact. But when you see him put together a full weekend like he did in Brazil, it's going to give everybody a lot more confidence. Everybody in the team, everybody, you know, outwardly, I think can take a lot from how he performed, because the race itself, obviously super impressive, fighting off Max, maintaining the race pace, you know, was never threatened by George really. But that's, to me, honestly, the least impressive part of the weekend, which is kind of highlighting how impressive that weekend really was. You know, a track he's never been to, and qualifies P2 for the sprint. In the sprint, difficult conditions, caught out some very established, successful, and experienced drivers. He was fine, held his own, brought it home P2. Backed it up in qualifying for the Grand Prix, and then executed great in the race. Little turn one thing with Piastri notwithstanding, survived that and did a great, great job in the race itself. And when you look at where Kimi's had some kind of up and down weekends, there's always a day, there's always a session where it looks like the kind of pressure gets to him. And it always seems to be, again, it's that internal pressure, because you could go all the way back to Australia, right? His first ever Grand Prix. On the racetrack, wheel to wheel, he was fine. He is not intimidated by the guys he's racing against. He is very competent. His racecraft is very impressive for a rookie. His spatial awareness is very impressive for a rookie. Again, turn one in Brazil notwithstanding. But that's why, like, the battle with Max was very impressive, but it wasn't as impressive because we've seen flashes of that from him already this year. It was more the ability to execute, to back up strong performances. Because once you qualify P2, finish P2, when you go into Grand Prix qualifying, that expectation is exponentially higher than had you qualified seventh and finished sixth in the sprint. And that's the kind of pressure that he has had, I think, more trouble with this year. And it didn't faze him, and he executed. So it's I think it was a big weekend of growth for Kimi, or shows a lot of growth.
Okay, Lando Norris doesn't believe in momentum, but I think Kimi Antonelli can. I do feel he's building something now.
I think he's got to be careful about that, to be honest. I think he's got to have more of the Lando approach, because I think a lot of what has hurt him at some races has been expectation. You know, it's been talked about a lot. Like, this is not an original thought for me by any stretch. But when the European season started, his form really took a dip, right? So he started the year at a bunch of tracks he'd never been to. He's now ending the year on a bunch of tracks he's never been to. And he's bookended his year with some pretty good performances. In the middle, at all the tracks he's raced at extensively, performing below expectation. And I think that's part of the problem, is the expectation was higher. They came in like, oh, well, you know, you did so well at these tracks you've never been to. Just wait till you get to a place you've done 1,000 laps around. And that expectation, I think, got to him and led to kind of a rougher period of performance. You then get away from those tracks back to sprint races at tracks he's never been to. One practice session before going into qualifying for the sprint race. But I think that's what's important, is off the back of this. So Mexico, he beats George. Brazil, he beats George every session of the weekend. He's got to get to Vegas with tempered expectations. This is a complete reset. We are not in Brazil anymore. What you did in Brazil means absolutely nothing in Las Vegas. So be happy with the result. Be confident in yourself that you were able to progress and continue to perform. But do not expect that you're going to beat George necessarily. Do not expect that you're going to be fighting for a podium. Just go in there with the mindset of, I'm new here, never been to this track, I got to learn, and just kind of do the best job you can. And I think driving with that sort of weight off your shoulders and expectation out of your mind helps drivers drive better.
Hinch, do you believe in form when you look at racing drivers? Do you believe that you can have some days are better than others and there's nothing that you can consciously do to rectify a situation? Just some days you're in good form and some days you're not.
Yes, I fully believe in form, and I think that everybody has off days. I think that it's important to analyze those days and try to establish something. But if nothing stands out, then you kind of have to forget that day happened. Because if you let it sit and live in the back of your head that, oh, I had this bad day and I don't even know why, you're always going to be questioning, God, I wonder why that was. And you're spending that energy trying to establish something, trying to figure something out, you're not going to figure out. So the quicker you can just let it go, you don't get to Formula One without being an exceptional racing driver. You don't forget how to drive overnight. So if you have a bad day or you have a bad weekend, if there's nothing that's super apparent to learn from. So, you know, you look at Oscar in Mexico. There was something that very specific that he could learn in a characteristic that the car had and a technique that he needed to perfect to get better in those conditions. Perfect. Look at that, analyze that, work on that. Cool. If you go to a different track and there's not something that's that obvious and you're just having an off day, you almost have to forget it ever happened and just approach the next weekend with a completely fresh mindset. Because again, you know how to drive a race car. You don't get here without that. And as soon as you start thinking back about things that you can't figure out, you don't know why it didn't go well, your energy staying back there, your mental capacity staying back there, it's not staying with you in the present and letting you drive to your full potential.
But do drivers, so Antonelli has just had this amazing weekend in Brazil. Does he, do you think, go to Vegas with more confidence?
I think so, yes. And I think that's appropriate. I think it's important to be confident in yourself that you can do the job. But there's a difference between confidence and expectation. And I think that's where he and the team around him need to be conscious of how they approach Vegas.
This feels like quite a good segue into talking about Ferrari when we talk about expectation. And I mean, crikey, their third pointless race weekend of 2025, but somehow Brazil felt worse than the other two. Just Friday, the car was nowhere. Then this Leclerc puts together this lap out of nowhere to put it P3 on the grid, but really the performance wasn't there. And then two DNFs. John Elkann, the boss, then comes out the following day and says, my drivers need to focus more and talk less. I mean, that's got negative vibes, that quote, hasn't it? And just, what do you do if you're Ferrari? How do you talk about resetting, not looking back when it comes to drivers. What do teams do? What is the mindset of the Scuderia as it goes to Vegas?
I mean, it's tough to know. It's tough to know what's happening inside that team right now. But ultimately, you know, this is where team principals really earn their money, is when these difficult situations arise, because so much of it is still mindset and so much of it is culture. And the weekend that they had, the subsequent comments from Elkann, that's gonna set a tone in that team. And it's not the kind of tone you want to show up to the racetrack with or hanging around the back of your head. So the weekend was the weekend. The comments from the boss were the comments from the boss. Fred Vasseur has to kind of approach these things head on, have a very frank conversation with the team, clear the air that needs to be cleared, and understand and make everybody in that team believe that we are still a team. We are all still going for the same thing. We have the same goals. We're all working very hard, and we're going to keep doing, you know, our best. We're going to do better than our best. We're going to put together the best weekend we've had all year, operationally, executionally, whatever. And see how, you know, it shakes out from a performance standpoint. The pace of the car is the pace of the car. The difficulty in the car is the difficulty in the car. We're three races to go. That's not going to change. And I think, again, being realistic about that, I don't think there's any motivational speech that anyone can give that's going to lock up a 1-2 for Ferrari in Vegas. I think, again, it's dealing with this issue because there's now been an issue. There's been a discussion. It's a public one. And, you know, letting the team know that they are still a team. They're all of each other's best allies in getting this thing going in the right direction and trying to just keep the tone as positive as you can, understanding the situation that you're in.
I thought it was very interesting after the race in Brazil that Lewis Hamilton used the word nightmare to describe what he's been living through at Ferrari. This is not his first rodeo. He's an intelligent man. He knew exactly what he was saying. And I think it's that comment in particular that Elkann is referring to when he says they need to talk less. I just find myself wondering what Lewis was trying to achieve by using the word nightmare, whether he was trying to take the blame himself. He's very good at taking the blame. You know, after all of the struggles in qualifying, he's the first one to say, it's me, I'm slow. Maybe it was an extension of that, but still, I thought it was fascinating that he used the word nightmare because he knew that whatever language you speak, you know what a nightmare is, and that was going to be, that's a powerful message that he's getting across.
I think with Lewis, he is a massively intelligent man, as you said. He is also an emotional one. And, you know, we catch him, I say we, you know, the media, the world catches him fresh out of the car after every session. He's got to go to the pen. And I think sometimes there hasn't been enough time between a bad session and when drivers have to have those chats with the world media to get your head in the right place. Certain drivers can do it easier than others. Everyone's a person. Everyone's a human at the end of the day. This is not an easy job. It's not an easy amount of pressure to deal with. So, you know, I think Lewis said that in the moment because it was an emotional moment. I think that, yeah, he certainly does want people to understand how difficult it's been. The other half of that quote about it being a nightmare is, you know, he's like, I'm stuck in this sort of this two-sided situation of the privilege of driving for this beautiful team. And like, you know, he paid the team a massive compliment before he then said how difficult the year's been. So, you know, I think Lewis is very aware that it's a privileged position to be racing for Ferrari in Formula One. But this is also a guy that has won over 100 Grand Prix and 7 World Championships and didn't come here to finish 7th. So it's tough for people to sometimes grasp how challenging that position can be in for a driver. But again, part of the job is knowing what to say and when, knowing what not to say and when. And I think, you know, Elkann's comments are a little bit of a reminder of, hey, guys, even when it's going poorly, like, we can have those discussions behind closed doors, but when there's a microphone in your face, sorry, you got to have to toe the line a little bit. And it sucks that drivers can't always just speak their mind, but that's the reality of the situation. And you know what you sign up for when you get into this business.
Vegas in 2023, they finished on the podium last year. Do you think this is their last opportunity of 25 to get that elusive first victory?
It's certainly their best one of the three remaining. Certainly. And what's so interesting about them and Mercedes kind of, you know, in particular, is you get these pretty drastic swings in performance that are sometimes inexplicable and both good and bad. So for all we know, we could show up and they could be 1-2 on the grid again. And even they will look around and be like, yep, not entirely sure where that came from, but we'll take it and see how it goes on Sunday.
Now, let's go further back down the order, because in the constructors' battle, there are just 12 points covering Racing Bulls in sixth, Aston Martin in seventh, and Haas in eighth. It feels that Ollie Bearman is carrying the Haas team at the moment. He's done four consecutive points finishes. He's outperforming Esteban Ocon. He was brilliant in Q1 and Q2 in Brazil. There was a little bit of me that thought, my goodness, is he going to be in the top three at one point on the grid? Let's start by talking about him. You wrote an article on F1.com recently, actually, Hinch, about him and his rookie season and his future. Just what are the main headlines for you in terms of the job that Ollie's doing?
I think the main ones are, you know, you look at qualifying head-to-head with a vastly more experienced race-winning teammate. You talked about that run that he's on, four consecutive Q3 appearances, four consecutive points finishes. That's also ignoring a run of four consecutive 11th place finishes that he had kind of in the middle of the year. So, I mean, he's been there or thereabouts. And, you know, look, it's a car that the midfield's just so close, right? And until, I think, his fourth in Mexico, they were ninth in the constructor standings, you know. He was getting those points finishes. They were ninths and tenths. You're getting 1 or 2 points when Sauber throws a podium up at Silverstone and gets a haul of points. You know, that's hard to come back from when you're only getting 1 or 2 a weekend. But the fact that Ollie's been consistently doing that, and Esteban has not been as consistent in contributing, and then you have, you know, that kind of breakout performance from a result standpoint. He's kind of helped get them back into that conversation. And it's funny because I feel like we went into Brazil with that same spread of 12 points, but everybody scored points and it's moved around, but the overall spread's the same. But within that, you know, little pocket, it's changed a bit. And it's such a fun battle to watch. There's so much pride on the line. Obviously, there's the money on the line for those teams, but there's just so much pride right now because it is such a close battle. And one Sunday can swing it, because you get a result like that fourth in Mexico, or like Nico's third in Silverstone, double points for Racing Bulls, and it can really change the complexity of it and the look of it. But Bearman, the highlights for sure have been his single lap pace has been phenomenal from the get-go. His racecraft is getting better and better. His consistency is getting better and better. And he's doing it, you know, with a smile on his face and with a youthful exuberance that I think is kind of refreshing in Formula One right now.
Are Haas going to finish sixth? Do you see them getting those 12 points over Racing Bulls?
12's a lot. 12's a lot to outscore them by, because the Racing Bulls is a competitive car, and Hadjar has been bulletproof all season long. Lawson has been a bit more fluctuating, but when he's on, you know, as we saw last weekend, he's on. The two of them are often finishing close to each other when Lawson's on a strong weekend. So I think it's going to be very tough to outscore them by 12 points. I think Haas could get 12 more points by the end of the year, but that's at the same time with Racing Bulls having zero. I find that one a bit of a stretch.
All right. What about Aston? Aston are only 2 points ahead of them in P7.
Yeah, I think that's much more. I think that's much more plausible. The thing with Aston is, you know, as much as you hate to say it, the last kind of half the season there's only been one car scoring points. You know, even in Mexico, Haas, you know, Ollie was fourth. Esteban was in the points as well. He was P9, right? So it was a double score for them. I don't know the last time Aston had a double score. But unless they're at a track where it really suits the car, like it did in Hungary and kind of like it did in Brazil, honestly, the car was fairly competitive there. I don't know. I just feel like the other teams have a bit more momentum, and there are tracks coming up that are going to be better for them than maybe the Aston. So I could see them falling back.
Well, Hinch, it's been a great chat. Thank you very much for your time as ever. Can we end this with some predictions? Come on, give us your top three for Sunday in Vegas.
Top three for Sunday in Vegas. I'm going to go a Verstappen win from a Russell second and a Hamilton third.
Wow. So Hamilton's first podium for Ferrari. Why do you think Verstappen's going to put it over Mercedes?
Because he's Max. You know, it's a terrible excuse, but it's also the best one. I think that some of what made Mercedes so much better than everyone else in Vegas last year has been inherently built out of the car to make it a more all-rounded car. So I don't think that their advantage is going to be as good. We've had other cooler Grand Prix where they were competitive, but they were not the lights out above the rest of the field that we saw in Vegas last year. And I think, you know, I think the Red Bull is just at a very high level right now. Max is always at a high level, and they just have a way of pulling out results when they need them, don't they? So, I think advantage to a very slight degree to Max going in.
And that's a great finishing order for the championship for the neutral, because you're suggesting we're going to get no McLaren on the podium, which means Max is going to gain a bunch of points. It's going to be a brilliant one. I actually still think Russell can do it. I feel there's something about him in Vegas and street tracks. I thought his performance in Singapore earlier this year, you know, those two laps good enough for pole in quali. There's something about Russell. So, and also, he will have had his nose put out of joint by Antonelli in Brazil, so he's going to be pushing hard from the outset. Well, Hinch, thank you so much. Great to speak to you, and I will see you in Vegas.
I cannot wait. Look forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
And if you have F1 TV, you can watch Hinch's analysis of all the action in Las Vegas with live coverage of every session. You can also keep across everything that happens at F1.com, the F1 app, and at F1 on social media. Or you can watch F1 cars racing down the strip at 200 miles an hour yourself. Just go to F1LasVegasGP.com to get your tickets now. Thank you very much for listening. We will, of course, be back next Monday with our review of the race. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.